and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week, I'm joined by one of the wonderful members of the team of the EV Cafe. And this week, I've just got John Curtis. Hey, John.
It's only for the lovely things you say that I come here. Do you know that? Oh, and the guests, of course.
Oh, yes, the guests. And talking of our guests, we get to speak to innovators, pioneers, and collaborators in our industry. And this week, we have none other than Carla from Volta. And you all know her, I'm sure you will. Now, Carla, welcome.
Thank you so much. Hello. Hello, both.
It's fantastic to have you with us. We have been looking forward to this for some time, and the journey that you have been on, both personally and also the company that you work for in Volta, has been one that I think has captured the minds of our industry, really, to be fair, because, you know, everybody has really been very positive about Volta. But also very positive about you and about what you've done in fighting in the startup octagon and now in Phoenix mode. So, Carla, listen, you have a really interesting journey. But first of all, tell us all, for those of them that have been under a rock for the last few years, what is it that you do? What's your role at Volta? And give us a brief overview of Volta the truck.
Thank you, Paul. So Volta is a startup. We launched the business in 2019. And in less than 5 years, we went from a bit of a crazy idea and a crazy bet, which was revolutionizing the trucking industry, to production, but definitely a roller coaster in between, right? It was never chilled and never easy, right? But this is not what we signed up for. As of me, I signed up because this was the first time in my career that I was not introduced by a job description. You know, I joined the founders to really deliver on the mission, and that's what I've held very close to my heart. I don't wake up for a job. I wake up because this is my life's path, right, to drive change. So the company is all about building trucks for sustainable cities, but also to make the industry more attractive to younger generations and women when it comes to the trucking community or the drivers community, but also make cities safer. So the truck is unique, right? It's the only 16-ton that's purpose-built to be electric, to operate in city centers. Now, it's a bit of a new strategy with Volta. We're not so tech or service orientated. We really focus on building chassis cabs, as you can see behind me. And we can adapt to any use case, right? So if you want towing solutions, if you want hydro carriers or refuse collection solutions, we can build this for customers. But Paul, you've been yourself in the cab many times, right? What struck you the most, would you say?
Oh, look at this. The interviewee has become the interviewer. Ah, very good. Do you know what? You're right, Carla. And I've had the privilege of driving about in the vehicle, getting in and out of the vehicle. And one of the things that really struck me was getting in an 18, 19 or 17 ton truck. I forget the weight, but anyway,
16. That
was 16 ton. There you go.
It was so 19 once Paul got in.
Very good, Mr. Curtis. But I got... Oh, goodness. So I got in and out really easily. And I also loved, because it has a unique central driving position. Of course, central driving position makes all the sense in the world, because trucks typically aren't overtaking things all of the time. Mm-hmm. But then, so ease of access, central driving point of view, and then the visibility. Wow. Mm-hmm. So we know that it has greater visibility than almost any other truck on the market. I don't know, maybe officially has the world's best. I don't know. It probably does.
I think it is, yeah.
But it's such an... Yeah, I think it's fair. So that was what struck me, and just taking advantage of that ground up design. I mean, so many things, but you can maybe ask me later, what other things did you love about our Volta cab? But John, you've seen it though, right?
I have, yeah. And I'm a car person, Carla. So, yeah. You know, passenger cars to me are life. And commercial vehicles are new. And when I stepped into the Volta, I immediately thought McLaren F1, central driving position. So that was fabulous. But what really struck me was how you thought about the driver. So the driver experience was extremely good. As Paul says, this all-round visibility, the computer screens that you have access to, the onboard systems, the even simple things, the comfort of the seat, everything had been thought through for the driver. The low step into the cab. It was just brilliant. I loved it. And that's kind of the thing which really caused me the most pain. There were two things when Volta had a tough time. One was the loss of what was a market-leading design. And the other was that I'd met so many brilliant people from Volta who had invested so much of themselves. And you started this, Carla, by saying that you were given this opportunity. You're a brave woman. Some madman, Carl Magnus Norden, comes along and says, oh yeah, I don't know anything about trucking, but I'm going to create a truck that's just right for the cities. And you said, oh yes, I'll back that. Thank you very much. What went on in your head?
That's literally how he came to me, right? I don't really know, but I literally did a big turn, you know, in my career, because my background is hospitality. And so I traveled all around Europe, and then somehow I end up in London to live over there. This is right before Brexit and just in the middle of COVID. And the story is, you know, hospitality in the middle of COVID is just, it just didn't continue for that many months, and still is a sector that's picking up. So in my career in hospitality at Ritz-Carlton, I met with a few leaders from Mercedes, and Mercedes also owning the Smart brand. Smart actually stopped combustion engine manufacturing in 2018. And this is when I first got interested about electrification. And I just loved the courage. I just loved the fact also that I was never going to sit in a box, you know. I had a mission, which was grow the business, sell trucks, and evangelize, you know, the community. And this is a role that I've loved doing, because I believe in this, right? I'm not selling a product. I mean, nothing wrong with this, but I need to feel like I belong to something. Yeah. And that's definitely the case with Volta. So, yeah, probably a bit of a craziness at this point, I'd say. But I joined somebody, and I joined a small team that really inspired me from the beginning.
Mm. It's critical, isn't it, to actually feel the passion.
What I love, Carla, and what Carl Magnus Norden must have seen was this incredible person that is... just got a drive and a passion. And there's a brilliant comment from somebody that you worked with. I think I pronounced her name correctly, Suthida, ex-director of Kia Finance. Yeah, okay, thank you. Say it for us.
Suthida. Yeah, I say hi to her.
Perfect. But she said, Carla's customer-centric approach is not just a strategy, but a defining characteristics, shaping her interactions with a level of empathy and understanding that leaves a lasting impression. Her ability to swiftly build networks and relationships is not just impressive. It's a rare and invaluable skill that elevates her impact. Her unparalleled enthusiasm is contagious. And this is the person that Carl Magnus saw. Where did all that come from? Is it the vision and the passion and the dream, or is there something inbuilt in Carla that kind of always wants to excel and impress?
You know, I paid Suchida for this comment, by the way, so there's a little bit of truth in there. I think this all comes from emotional intelligence, I'd say. You know, my story, my career starts quite early. You know, I left home when I was 14 years old. Home wasn't so great for me. School wasn't so great for me. And so I actually started working really early. I need to be probably out there and occupy my brain, you know. And when you work in hospitality, your whole mission is to make your guests have a great time, have a memorable experience. So you always are focused on somebody else. You're always trying to prevent, you're trying to improvise, do whatever it takes. And I think that customer centricity and that emotional intelligence comes from all these scenarios, all these people with small or very large ego or very different personalities that you just have to deal with no matter what. That's been a strong focus in my career. And maybe I think about clients as guests still. You know, when I speak to customers, obviously I'm trying to sell them trucks, but then it's how do I support them in actually making money of these trucks? How do I sustain this engagement over time? And yeah, I try to put myself in their shoes. I think we need a bit more of this, right? Continuity in relationship. And we operate in B2B, right? Paul, you know what it's like. I know you like cars more, John, but I think it's maybe a different world, and different characteristics, like different sales methods, I guess.
But I think what we're all doing is we're looking for the same answers, which are how do we move people and things around in an efficient way that's clean, mm-hmm. that's not damaging the environment in the way that we have for far too long? How do we reduce consumerism? How do we make sure that we only focus on the things that matter? We have to look surely at what we need rather than what we want as the way forward. And that applies to no matter how you go about your life. There are good ways of living. Are you a good person by nature?
Funny enough, I've been reflecting on this quite a lot because that's quite personal. But my parents didn't impose me with a religion. Do you call it atheist, something like this?
Atheist.
But I'm always trying to think, yes, I need to get the right results, but I need to do it in the right way. And you know, trying to keep always ethics and you know these values that I was raised with. I think I am a good person. I make mistakes, right? We all do. It's just how do you learn from this? How do you ask for feedback? How do you improve? Would you say, guys, are you good persons as well, or not?
Oh my gosh, that's such a deep question, isn't it? I mean, John, you were mean to ask it in the first place, but now we're getting it back at us. This is how it feels. I mean, listen, I know I want to be a good person. I want to do the right things. I want to help people. I care about people. I think, you know, both John and I, you know, we have a care and a concern, that, you know, around people's mental health and stuff. Mm. So I think, you know, what the EV Cafe did was create a platform where we want to embrace people and help people on their journey. If that makes us good, I listen, like you said, Carla, I've made mistakes. And John knows all my mistakes, or a lot of them. And listen, there was a period in my life where I was definitely not a good person, for various different reasons, broken, just unable to be. But I think today, yeah. What about you, John?
It's interesting. I went through this over Christmas, and I asked my family if they thought I was a difficult person to live with. And I got rammed down my throat that I'm not a difficult person to live with, but I am unique. and that brings challenges. I'm autistic. I've got ADHD. I have a number of challenges which I have carried my whole life. And so what you see and what's going on in my head are two very different things. I've learned to cover what's really going on inside to fit in. But I recognize that there are good people in the world that I can learn from, and I surround myself with good people, and that helps me work out what's normal, in inverted commas. So am I a good person? I think by nature, no. I'm a rule breaker, but I'm a rule follower. I'm a real contradiction. But people like Paul help to keep me grounded.
Let me just come in there. This wonderful person that is, he is a good person, Carla. I'll answer for him. He is a good person. But the rule keeper and the rule breaker is hilarious, because I remember phoning him after I'd said, can you just wait here, and then can you help me with this stuff? It was in a show, I can't remember. And I phoned him up and I said, where have you gone? Where are you? And he said, I'm about 30 miles away. And I went, why? And he said, well, the security guard told me I had to go. So I went. And I'm like, but I need you here now.
And that's how my mind works. So yeah. I had an instruction from Paul. I had an instruction from the security guard, which overtook the instruction from Paul, and I'm a very literal person. So if somebody says go, I go. I don't question it. But other times, if somebody was to tell me to go in the wrong way, I'd practically want to fight them, because you don't tell me what to do. And I'm so complex. And I think we all are in our own ways.
All unique, yeah. And since you had that conversation with the family, which is great, by the way, I found that nicknames are usually quite revealing of personalities. So I wanted to ask you guys if you have a nickname you'd like to share, and I give you mine after.
We've been set up here, Paul. This is bang out of order.
There's a camera under here somewhere. Anyway. So I will tell you my nickname, because it is on another podcast, but I was given the name Muffin the Mule. And it's a Muffin the Mule is a character in British TV. You might have to Google it. I think it's safe. But it was a derivative. So I started off with the name Ragamuffin or Vagamuffin, which was like vagabond. So similar to the word vagabond. So that's where it came from, because I was in a children's home and people were, because, you know, you probably don't have the good stuff like everybody else and all that sort of stuff. And it was done affectionately and nicely. So that's what my nickname was. So yeah, nice. That's me. John?
Oh, this could go horribly. I'm going to pick one of the names. So when I was at school, I used to play rugby. So I was quite good at rugby, and so was known, and I annoy people. So I know that my whole life I've annoyed everybody that's been around. Yeah, it is what it is. And in the UK we say you bug me. You know, if I annoy somebody, I bug them. So I became known as the Rugger Bug. So I played rugby, rugger, bug. And then when CB Radio came out, that was my handle. So I was Rugger Bug. And so that was probably the only nickname that has ever stuck other than JC. And I've been JC for 20 years now. And that's, you know, but I respond to anything. You know, you just call me whatever and I'll just come running. Yeah, I'm the Rugger Bug.
Yeah, your turn. Come on, back to you.
Yeah, I thought, which one should I give? Because I have a few. But this one that I like. So my family says I'm a very short temper, but I don't think it's right. I just accumulate stuff because I don't necessarily communicate them. And at some point, it just becomes Vegeta. So Vegeta, you know Vegeta, this character? This is my nickname. So when I accumulate and I get angry, like I literally have veins all over, and I look like this, literally.
That's superb. I'd pay good money to see that.
So, Carla, you've got to tell us. Listen, what we see in front of us is a very passionate, very driven, very engaging human being. Were you always this way? I mean, you talk about, you know, obviously leaving home or certainly going into the working world at a very early age, 14 years old. You know, I was still causing mayhem at that and wouldn't have been working at all. It was probably doing other things that were very negative. It sort of says a picture of the person. Are you competitive? What is this? What's driving you?
I felt at this point that I didn't have much choice. You know, it was, I think, a way for me to be myself and leave and express myself, and I needed to go out. So I grew up, I think, quite quickly, you know, was in the adult world quite quickly. And so I didn't necessarily fit, let's say, with people my age. Now, I wouldn't say I'm that competitive with others. I like to collaborate. I like to connect the dots. I funnel energy from other people to actually work together, right? Like even with competition, like I love talking to our competitors because I can learn so much and I cannot do this by myself, right? Like we need that as a whole industry to move forward. Now, I think I'm the most competitive with myself. Because I've always been told, you know, that as a woman or as whoever I was back then, you know, I just needed to be the best, right? To be the best, but version of myself, which is a great way to think about things, you know, to be able to evolve, but can be quite tiring, right? Like it's always that little voice, you know, when I do a presentation, when I do a speech, when I do a conference, whatever it is, then I get these feelings where I'm like in my bed after 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning, waking up and I'm thinking, why did I say that? I could have done this. I could have done that. And it's so tiring. Like your brain never stops like ruminating almost. Right. So it's just about letting go, working on, you know, self-esteem. Right. And not only putting everything in your job, because you know, I found myself, you know, when we went into administration, because all my self-esteem, all my personal value, everything that I thought of myself was who I was at work, right? That was my title, that was what I represented, but I lost this, right? But the one mistake that I did was thinking my job was who I was. And I think a great reflection from this tough moment was, my job is not my path. My path is one thing. Volta is my vehicle on that path, which is driving change. The industry that I'm in love with at the moment is logistics. Tomorrow, it may be construction. I mean, the other day, but at the end of the day, I just want to have that positive impact on future generations. You know?
Speaking of which, no, that's a great answer because it enables me to ask a question about your biggest, your proudest moment. And I guess, I mean, you've addressed the United Nations. You are quite somebody, aren't you? You're quite, what's the word? Not shy, understated. You don't blow your trumpet and tell everybody how brilliant you are. You're humble, but you've played on a big stage.
Yes, and thank you for that. I mean, yeah, that was a self-pinching moment. I received this great invitation to be at the World Investment Forum, the United Nations, in Abu Dhabi. That was more than a year ago, in October 2023. And some of you will know that October 2023 was also administration period for Volta. Maybe I'll tell you this story, which is quite amazing and a bit of a proud moment. So I'm so happy. I'm so pumped. I'm in Abu Dhabi, right? And the next day, I'm supposed to walk on stage. And I'm supposed to be in front of a few presidents, few ministers, a lot of people working in the energy sector to talk about, you know, what's the future-proof solution for us and for governments. I loved this time also because we talked a lot about inclusion of emerging markets, right? Because we tend to think, oh, electrification is great for Europe, United States, it's great for also all emerging markets. You know, pollution isn't a European problem. Anyway, side story. So I'm in this hotel room and literally a few hours before I walk on stage and like 950 people, we received this this email from our dear CEO, Essel Salier, saying that unfortunately we have to go into administration. And, you know, I made the choice to go to Abu Dhabi, even though we knew that the company was in a difficult situation because it's a very transparent culture. But I didn't think it'd be the date, you know? Anyway, I'm in this hotel room thinking, what am I going to do, right? I'm supposed to, you know, put my uniform, go on stage, talk about how good we are, just do the usual careless stuff. And we have no more company. So I call my partner, I call my parents, I call everybody that's close to me to get some advice, right? And they all are, no, you don't come back, because I was prepared to catch a flight back. I was like, no, you don't do this. This is your moment. Go on stage, figure it out. Mm. And I didn't sleep much. I got on the conference stage very tired. But this is the first time in my life. It's so funny. I didn't have a bit of stress or a bit of anxiety. Whereas before, I usually ruminate and get very, very high adrenaline. I was so chill. I was like, I'm just going to do this. Anyway, I'm on stage and I'm talking about who we are. I do the kind of thing. And when it comes to the end of the story, which is today, somehow like I got this energy and I slammed the table. And I say, did you like that story? Because it's over. And I explain that at that time, you know, before wow. in front of so many people, well, this is over and this is why it's over. And a great reflection for us as an industry, two reasons, external factors, an immature value chain for the battery and an intense lack of financing and an intense lack of patient money for this transition to flourish and succeed. On top of a few internal choices and errors that we have made, but that was a that was quite a great moment. Thank you for bringing this up, John.
It's exciting, the journey that you've been on, and I do want us to reflect perhaps a little bit on you know the journey that Volta went on as well. But just for a moment, I want to reflect back on. Because this was a real moment of you looking to drive change. And it does seem that it's in your DNA to confront head on like challenges that are in your life and surrounding you. And one of the posts that really stands out for me on your LinkedIn profile, and for those of you that aren't connected with Carla on LinkedIn, please do. Her channel, if you want to call it that, is a real force for good. Carla is brilliant. But there was a post where you celebrate your difference. Now, I know that you've been very open about this, and I forgive me, I can't pronounce it probably correctly, but is it Vertilis? Vertila?
It's vitiligo.
So you explain it, Carla, because you put a post on there celebrating your difference, something that, you know, sets you apart, right? And some people can take that as a real negative, and possibly as you were at school and things like that, maybe it was life was hard in that respect because kids are cruel, right? Mm-hmm. But you reflected on this now and reflected on the beauty that it is for you. It's that differentiating factor. And I love the sentiment that you spoke about was because people took a lot of encouragement from it, but you reflected back and said, I'm just trying to be now the person I needed to meet back then. you know, or some time ago. And it's just, it's a wonderful reflection, but it just speaks to this person that wants to drive change and embrace the world. What is it about you? What was that journey like to get to that place, I guess?
It wasn't always like this, Paulin. You know, we saw... so into social media and always comparing ourselves and, oh, I got this, I got that, you know, I'm not like, you know, always comparing, right? And I couldn't associate with anybody, right, that had the same disease except for a very cool model and a few more people that talked about the disease. But I want to see it as a blessing, right? Because if I'm honest, it's, you can see it, it's visual now. I love it. I wouldn't want it to go. But it could be something that we can't see and that I find out two or three years down the line that something's going on in my body, right? So I'm so grateful, right, for this. This is probably a reminder to stop stressing out and to stop ruminating and to stop thinking all the time, right? But it wasn't always like this. And I think this is what I mentioned about wanting to be the person that I need to meet, because I'm healing. You know, there's traumas, there's things that are stuck in my head. And, you know, by healing, I find my wholeness, you know, I find my own spectrum. And, you know, when you're little, you know, you haven't found that, or maybe you were there, but then because things happen, you start losing your authenticity. You want to almost hide who you really are, right? So that's the journey that I'm on, and I think we all are to a certain extent. You know, when we want to be vulnerable and say, you know, I have this, I need help with that, I'm not that as strong as I pretend I am, you know, that's how I think about how I want to help others. I hope this makes sense. And John, I love that you say, you know, about ADHD. How is, you know, see,
ADHD. So I have attention deficit hyperactive disorder and autism. Okay. So okay. I have conflicting mental neurological challenges, and they're my strength. You know, I found out only 6 months ago that this was the case, and I just thought I was different, and I thought I was difficult, and I've been told my whole life that, you know, you can't be managed, it's difficult to live with you, it's difficult to accept the way you are. And then I got a diagnosis and suddenly all the bits fell into place and I knew that it was okay to be me.
Did you feel relieved? And, you know,
I felt huge amounts of grief for the things that I had done in my life where I had caused others pain without knowing that how I'd caused them pain. But I leant on Paul a great deal and shared with him, and he and I work so well together because he's one of the people who is open to hear the things I say. Paul is obsessed with phoning. He has to telephone everybody. As somebody who has autism, I hate the telephone. I can't be doing with it. But what we've done is we've found a way to work together where he will message me sometimes. And sometimes I will even phone him. And he's one of the very few people I do it for because he cares. He meets me halfway. And I think as a person that is maybe different, that's all I ask, is to be accepted for who I am and perhaps accommodate me as best you can. He does that in spades. And I guess that's what you found, that people take you for who you are because you've been open and honest about who you are.
Exactly. And sorry about the acronyms, but I'm I also have dyslexia, so I just cannot remember them.
So throwing letters at you is hopeless. No. Oh, Carla. So what about the future? What does the future look like for Carla and Volta? What's happening?
I have one of my colleagues that was on the podcast. I just watched him and he said, you know, I don't have a 5-year plan. And I reflected and I don't have a 5-year plan either, but I have a 5-year vision of the woman that I want to be. And I know it sounds very, how'd you say, not cheesy, but I'll try. Every day, you know, I'm trying to look like this person, right? So it's that future path of becoming the person I'd like to be. Now, when it comes to Volta, you know, we're working really hard in the background to bring the vision to reality. I'd say it's not an easy one. It's a little bit like love, you know. We're building trucks, but we're building trust more than anything. And trust takes years, right? Takes years to build, and it gets broken like this, right? So it's about getting back to the stage where we are transparent enough, we are vulnerable enough in the way that we can talk about the mistakes and the learnings and how we're improving. So we're continuing on that path. And, you know, if, you know, I'll make a wish later, but, you know, if I can give a little bit of anticipation, what I see for the business is, it's trucks on the road, it's financial stability, and it's also, you know, showing to all our previous colleagues that we are doing the right thing. Previous colleagues, previous suppliers, anybody that's supported us, you know, once we get there, I think we'll look after everybody that's been supporting us from the beginning. Now it's just forming, stabilizing, getting our health back to grow and expand.
I guess that's how you find out who your friends are, isn't it? Is when things are going well, people want to be your friends. When things have been difficult, did you find that those people that you thought were friends suddenly disappeared? And now some are beginning to come back because, oh, actually, Volta's not about in a bad place.
It's crazy, actually, John, because when this happened, I had this very high adrenaline moment of United Nations, and then I went back home. And that was extremely tough because my brain wasn't busy, right? You would know what I mean. My brain wasn't busy, and I was ruminating, and I was in that grief period. But it's crazy. I mean, there's some people I still haven't responded to, just to tell you how many messages and how many emails and phone calls I received. And I'm talking about everybody from the industry, even competition. Like, I had people from our competitors just writing the nicest notes, and I know they meant it, you know. Why would you do it, right? So it's in these tough times that I saw the support. I still see, you know, companies working with us, working with me as an example in the marketing side. And even though they were impacted by bankruptcy and had debts, you know, with Volta V1, they still trust Volta V2 and they want to help us because they know that we need them to get to this 5 years vision. I've been amazed, and I think it's very genuine. But I agree, you know, I said I'd found this more in my personal life, you know, when everything is great, you know, people are always next to you, and when you are struggling, it's another story, but it's part of life, you know. And I'm a person that doesn't have many friends. To be fair, I didn't spare enough time for that, given my childhood and that. I was scared to give my trust, and now I'm changing. But I'm so grateful, you know, for the friends I have. They are like family. They're so close to me, and they know who I am, you know. And that's the main thing. Do you have many friends, guys, or are you more of a selective
oh,
bunch?
Gosh. Do you know what? It's funny because I was at a funeral yesterday of, I can't really say a friend, somebody I knew many years ago. We'd been doing something very important together, trying to get something going to work with drug addicts and people in difficulty and that kind of thing. But anyway, we didn't really get on, she and I. But 30 years later, sadly, she passed away from cancer. And we'd probably seen each other maybe twice in that period. And I reflected. I was with some really good friends, some of my, well, my best friends, and guys that I'd known, and we were just reflecting and laughing. But I have very few friends, and I was really reflecting on this hundreds of people that were at this lady's, and she made an impact on such a wide variety. And I thought, what on earth am I doing with my life? What, you know, I don't, you know, does it really matter? Electric vans? Does it really matter? I don't know. I need to be a friend. And I'm so, thank you, Carla. It does. And it does matter. But, you know, John speaking earlier, and we've spoken, you know, I'm so grateful for his friendship, you know, because we've become really close friends. I wonder what my funeral will be like. Who's going to be there? Who's going to bother? And what would they say? That's a bit of a morose moment there, but probably oversharing, really. But so I have some great friends, but not many.
So where is it that you want to leave? What do you want them to say?
Oh, Jesus.
You know, in 50 years' time, we have time, but...
Yeah, if I make it to 105, Carla, then 106. Gosh, what do I want them to say? I'm in heck. Well, you're getting this question back at you, girl, I'll tell you. What would I like them to say? That he was a good friend, that he cared, and that he made a difference and was a good dad. A good husband, a good friend. Now, stop it. I'm over to somebody else. Amen, indeed.
It does make you think. I was at a funeral yesterday, separate funeral. So hundreds of miles apart. We both went through very, very similar experiences. It does make you reflect on your own life. You know, he was a man of 91 years old who had led a very full life, and basically it came down to he was a great dad of two. He was a fabulous grandfather and male role model for one of the family. And he was a good community servant. He was somebody who picked up the litter and made sure that everybody was okay and stopped and chatted in the street with people. And the fact that he'd spent his whole life in financial services and banking didn't matter. It got just a little mention. It was all about who he was as a person that really counted. Yeah. And you go away from that thinking, well, who am I? And am I focused on the right things? And all I know is the older I get, the closer I get to focusing on the right things.
That's true. So, Carla, what about you? You said you've raised the subject of not having very many friends, and obviously I get a difficult start, right? So the start in life and how you form your relationships when you're young definitely affects how you progress and become more mature and older, and then you begin to reflect and change. Where are you at now with that? What is the value of friendship to you? I think you've alluded to it, but how would you expect, hope, people will reflect on you in later years?
I think I'm not scared to give my trust and my vulnerability away anymore. You know, I'm done with this superwoman fake thing, because this is not who I am. You know, the real Carla is very sensitive. Yes, I'm fearless. I'm full of fears, but I'm never scared to confront them. So that's who I am. You know, I'm a very skeptical person. I was born skeptical. I was always, you know, anxious about what could happen, whether it's for my family, for myself, or for the people I care for. So I'm always like in protective mode. I'm always like, okay, what's going to happen? And I'm now shifting where, you know, I'm not scared to ask for support. I'm not scared to say, I don't know, can you help me? You know, so that comes through, you know, friendship as well. You know, being authentic, you know, from what we talked about, being able to say, hey, what do you think? I've messed up here, or I don't know how to do, you know, like, it's just like being able to share with women, you know, that I have made friends of. And again, funnel that energy in the right way. You know, like, I'm not competing against anybody. I'm really trying to collaborate, and whether it's at work or in my personal life. So no, I want to be remembered as somebody that drove positive change and that broke, you know, unhealthy cycles in society or in my kind of transgenerational channel, you know, how we see women, how we talk about women, how we think of women, but men also, you know, there's this, I think, there's all these themes that we attribute to women and men that don't matter anymore. You just have to find the great balance, and you just have to adapt and make it work. So yeah, again, a good person, I think, is the bottom line. A person that makes mistake, but that just is courageous and vulnerable enough to admit and learn from these.
I'm fascinated to understand, Carla, what you would do with your spare time. So when you are not busy doing your work and championing all of the things that you do, how do you spend that precious time on your own?
So weekends are meant to be dedicated to moving on with our house renovation. So we went into this project of renovating a house, and then bankruptcy happened, and that was also another layer of complexity. But yeah, trying to find the time for that. I also went into yoga, and you might, you know, might think, you know, this sounds a bit ridiculous, but yoga is insanely hard, and especially on the mind. You know, letting go, stop thinking, and just focusing on breathing and exercising. It's been great for me. But in the same register, I'd say scuba diving has become a great passion of mine. I just recently did my certification, and that was like a new birth for me. That was amazing. And I love cooking. I'm a very good cook. So next time you guys come to Paris, I'll make a very nice meal. I love cooking.
Superb.
We'll be there. So, Carla, we have a little tradition on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I know that we could talk for hours, and maybe that sort of bodes for a part two, maybe one of these days. But anyway. We have a closing tradition where we present you with the magic wand. So this was presented to us, actually. We used to do it metaphorically, but now we do it physically. Benoit Leflamme, I believe a countryman of yours, a Frenchman. So he gives us the wand, and I'm going to hand it to you. There you go, the through the camera, the magic wand, and you can grab it. Wish for one thing for your future, for the future of Volta, whatever it might be. What is the future that you hope for, and how would you make it happen with one wish?
That's a hard one. I should have thought about this answer. So my wish is, sustainability. Abracadabra. Sustainability for you to live until 106 years old, for Volta to live for more centuries that you can think of. Yeah, and for people to be making the right choices and have the right mindset towards the action versus inaction. And I really hope that this year will bring us a lot of great news in the sustainability space.
Definitely. You deserve it. You work so hard.
If I get to 105, I will post on LinkedIn that... Do you know what? I'm here because bloody Carla Dietrue. Sorry, I'm sorry. I've ruined your surname. But it's all down to that blooming magic wand. I didn't even think it was real. There we go. Goodness. So, Carla, hopefully we will get to see you in the not too distant future. The commercial vehicle show beckons. For those of you listening, that's in the NEC in Birmingham, and we hope that Carla will be there with the Volta truck and a whole bunch of news, and hopefully joining us on stage in person. So you'll be able to come and see. And do you know what? I know, Carla, you have got an immense amount of time for the people that want to ask you questions and get inspiration from you, because you are actually genuinely an inspirational character to many, especially young people, young women in particular. And I know that I've introduced you to some, and you give them all the time in the world, even though you're incredibly busy and incredibly hardworking in your world, but you stop and give people time, and that is such a great, great attribute. John, one final thought from you.
Just that I think the lesson I take from Carla is that vulnerability is a strength. Mm. And for many years, I and many of the people around me have tried to be something that society expects: strong, courageous, brave, unmoved by things. And what I've learned from Carla and in my own life is show your soft side. I have this lobster on my wall, and the reason I have the picture of a lobster is because in order to grow, it has to shed its hard shell and it becomes very soft for a while. The only way you achieve growth is through becoming more vulnerable for a short period of time and then moving on and continuing that process. So thank you for being my living lobster.
I'll be your lobster.
Brilliant. Well, Carla, listen, thank you. It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. Thank you for being cheeky enough to ask us questions. How rude. But it's been great fun. Great to experience the passion and the drive that is behind it, and it get behind you, and the hope that that gives me and many passionate followers of the Volta journey hope that you will continue in Phoenix mode and continue building on. So well done, and thank you, and we look forward to seeing you in person in Birmingham, if not before.
Yes. Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody. Check out all of the various different channels where you can get. You can follow this now on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast page. Obviously, follow the main page for the EV Cafe Takeaway and on YouTube. Connect with Carla on LinkedIn. Not too many of you, though, because then she'll be catching up with me. We can't have that. But so if you connect with Carla, you've got to connect with me too. Connect with John. Follow us on every channel. Anyway, enough of all of that nonsense. Have a lovely day, everybody. And Carla, once again, thank you so much.
Merci beaucoup.